Southern Judicial Circuit. Hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention, and the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the NLRB versus River City Elevator. Ms. Schiff.
Good morning, Your Honors. As you know, my name is Lee Schiff. I represent the respondent in this matter, the River City Elevator Company. This case is before the court today on the NLRB's application for enforcement of its order directing River City to bargain with the International Union of Elevator Constructors, the IUEC. On November 18th of 1999, the NLRB conducted an election among seven River City employees to determine whether they desired to be represented by this union. The union won the election by a vote of 4-3. River City filed objections, a hearing was held before an NLRB hearing officer, and the hearing officer issued a report recommending that the employer's objections be overruled. The NLRB, without explanation or comment, summarily adopted the hearing officer's report and certified the union as a bargaining representative for the River City employees. Subsequently, River City refused to bargain in order to obtain judicial review of the board's certification of the union, and this appeal follows. River City contends today that it rightfully refused to bargain with the union because it has not been properly certified. The union's actions during the election campaign tainted the election, and the board should have set that election aside. In its brief, River City discusses several aspects of the union's so-called organizing policy utilized in this case. However, given the constraints of this oral argument, I'd like to focus on one particular aspect of the union's policy, namely the union's stated practice of giving mechanics cards or mechanic status to employees it is trying to organize, even though those employees have not taken the educational courses required to obtain such a status, and even though those employees have not passed a mechanics exam required to obtain such a status.
But couldn't they get it after the election?
No, not under the circumstances that the union offered in this case, Your Honor. After the election, you mean by joining the union, could they have gotten a mechanics card?
I understand, even if someone voted against the union, if the union won the election, then all the workers could then join the union and get these benefits.
Well, Your Honor, that's an interesting question, because if you look at the terms of the union's organizing policy, that's not stated. With respect to the initiation fees,
But the board found that.
But based on what facts?
But you have the burden of showing that it's, you know, clearly erroneous or without substantial evidence. So where have you shown that?
And that's true, because the only testimony in the record before the board is the testimony of Elijah Thomas saying that when the union organizer gave us this offer, I assumed that it meant I had to join the union.
Maybe he was wrong. He was your only witness?
Well, if you want to say he's our only witness, the other three union witnesses corroborated his testimony. There's no disputed facts in the record.
But isn't the problem with that argument that essentially what you're asking us to do is to reverse the credibility determination of the hearing officer, who found credible the testimony that the benefits weren't conditioned upon union support?
Your Honor, absolutely not. That is not what I'm asking you to do, because there are no disputed facts in the record. Any credibility determination that the hearing officer said he made was gratuitously made, because no one disputed Elijah Thomas's testimony. The union's argument is, look, this isn't conditioned on union support because we've offered it to all the employees across the board. However, the only way that the employees could have gotten a mechanic's card under the conditions stated is if they joined the union. That's the ultimate outcome.
Yeah, but before or after the election? If they could wait till after the election, then I don't see what your case is.
Well, Your Honor, that would be like saying to employees that if you join upon joining the union, I'm going to give you $1,000. Under Xavier, that's a clear illegal campaign tactic. In here, the union enticed these employees.
Yeah, but what if you say, if we win the election, we will give everybody $1,000?
I don't think under the law it matters. Because
but I don't understand that. I mean, the union can promise anything, can it, if it wins the election? Wins the election will make you all rich. We'll negotiate for very high wages.
No, the union cannot promise anything in an effort to win the election. The United States Supreme Court in Xavier clearly stated, if the promises the union makes entices employee to make an outward manifestation of union support, which then takes...
But that, of course, is not what I'm saying. I'm saying if the union just promises benefits if it wins the election, that's not a violation of anything.
In this case, Your Honor, the union was not just promising benefits. The union was giving the River City employees a free handout. That's why their witness, the union business agent, Bob Rucker, readily acknowledged before the hearing officer that, look, my union members are livid and upset over this. They've come and complained to me because the River City employees are getting a free handout. They don't have to go through the educational requirements that we had to go through. They don't have to take the mechanics exam. If they join the union in the context of organizing, you're giving them a free pass to higher paying jobs and to job security.
Isn't the provision of the mechanics card really an effort to recognize the work experience of an individual so that someone who has been in the trade for, say, 40 years isn't treated the same way as someone who's been in the trade, let's say, 5 years?
No, Your Honor, it's not, because under all the union's rules, bylaws, and standard agreement, in no other context but the organizing context, could an individual walk off the street and get a mechanic's card.
But wouldn't it be expected that in the context of organizing a workplace, a union would need to acknowledge the work experience of the employees in determining where they fit in the union structure?
No. In this sense, I think perhaps what you're getting at is, doesn't this fall under Xavier, where the union is just taking away an obstacle for the employees to join the union? And that's not what happened in this case. What happened in this case is twofold. The union first said to the employees, look, I'm going to take away the financial obstacles you have to joining the union. I'm going to reduce the initiation fee from $440 to $100, and I'm going to say the dues are only $20. So you don't have any financial obstacle. There's nothing significant that you're going to have to actually take out of your pocket to join the union if you truly want to support the union. But the union in this case went one step further, and they said, and if you do that, I'm going to give you a significant benefit. I don't think there's any dispute in this case that a mechanic's status in the union records is a significant benefit.
But when that's offered equally to all, regardless of their vote, how would that be coercive?
Because it wasn't offered regardless of the vote. In order to get it, you had to join the union.
But you could do that after the election.
That was not stated to these employees. It's not stated in the union policy. And why would the employee wait? Why would an employee wait to get $1,000, for example? If I can get it today, why should I wait? And that's, you can't, when you look at the facts...
Well, you said it was okay for them to forgive the initiation dues. That's the same thing. I don't understand your argument.
No, Your Honor. We are arguing that it is not okay for them to forgive the initiation fees in this case. the substantial initiation fees. That's one part of the argument in our brief.
But you gave an example of where they lowered from 440 to 100, and that's all right, I thought you said.
No, I didn't say that was all right. If I did, I apologize.
Yes, because you said then the union went one step further, which I understood you to mean was the unlawful step.
No, what I meant...
You think they can't offer any concessions? They can't say... that seems contrary to all the cases, that they can't offer concessions.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying on the facts of this case, if you couple the offer of the mechanics card with the reduction in...
All right. So you just said the reduction by itself is all right.
Under Xavier, you could argue that the reduction in and of itself
is okay.
Well,
now you're on both sides of that question.
No,
right? If you said it's bad, you said it's okay.
No, I don't believe I don't believe I'm saying that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is you have to look at the fact
of
this case.
I asked you whether if they just lowered the initiation fees, that would be a violation. You've said both yes and no within the last 2 minutes.
No. If that's the only fact in this case, I agree with you. Under Xavier, that would not be a violation. But that's not the only fact in this case. You can't take this case in a funnel and look at each individual fact. You have to look at the facts in totality. And if you do that here, the union created an offer for these employees which induced them to join the union. They got a benefit that they otherwise would not be entitled to.
Ms. Schiff, clearly we have the reduction offer. Of the dues, which you say may or may not be allowed under Xavier. The mechanics status offer speaks, does it not, to a situation at River City where there were no contemporary openings, right? So to get, isn't that right? There were openings at other facilities,
exactly.
Other companies, but so... is it something in futuro? I mean, in other words, what good was it for any of the seven who did not have the mechanics card? What benefit did they get immediately upon becoming a member of the union if there was no opening?
Because, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, that's right.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Because the union, as they argue in their brief, had an open membership policy. So immediately upon getting that card, they could go down to the union hall and paste and put their name on a work list.
I understand. But
that's
how would that impact? How would that impact the employment situation at River City?
Well, quite frankly, that would induce them to leave River City. I mean, they go and take the union employment, the higher paying job.
So do we have? Is that our evil here? Really, an inducement to disrupt the labor force by this offering a mechanics card? Because it that's what would be required, would it not? You'd have to leave at the point of the election to leave to go to another facility, not another facility, another company.
Yeah, if they had that opportunity, absolutely that would occur.
You're saying creating that opportunity is the unfair electioneering.
Well, creating that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is giving them a benefit that they otherwise would not receive. Unless they join the union,
mm-hmm.
which then is an outward manifestation of union support.
Okay. You want to save some time for rebuttal?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you.
Fair enough. Mr. Duryea?
May it please the Court, my name is Eric Duryea, and I represent the National Labor Relations Board. I'd like to spend my time today just making a couple of important factual corrections to what the company has represented in its brief, particularly as to potential discrimination between non-union members and union members in terms of the ability to obtain work off of the union's out-of-work list. The board cites a passage from Article 12 of the union's standard agreement that deals with the out-of-work list and how it's administered, but omits a really crucial section that makes completely evident that non-union members and members are treated equally in terms of referrals under this system. the company quotes, the union shall maintain, establish, maintain, and keep an open list for the employment of workmen qualified to perform the duties required. What the company omits is the next sentence. Such list shall be in writing, maintained, and kept current on a non-discriminatory basis, and shall not be based on or in any way affected by union membership, union bylaws, regulations, or constitutional provisions, or any other aspects or obligations of union membership, policies, or requirements. So, taking that addition to the fact that the union is maintaining an out-of-work list, it's evident that from the record that non-union members who are qualified to do mechanics work and union members will be referred out on an equal basis. So when the company then goes on to...
In reality?
I'm sorry?
In reality.
Under the terms of the standard agreement, which is the context in which the company has made its argument. So when the company goes on to say that that the employer shall use the union as first source of applicants for employment, as another quote to show that union members are getting these jobs first. A union member with mechanic status gets a job before a non-union member who's qualified to do mechanic work on the out-of-work list. That suggestion is incorrect. What the standard agreement requires is that the employer use the union's out-of-work list, which contains both union members and non-union members evaluated to do mechanics work one list.
Let me understand you here. As soon as you join this union under the offer proposed, you get a mechanics card, right?
That is depending on the level of experience and training that you are evaluated to have. It just so happens that in this instance, all of the employees at River City were evaluated, pardon me, by the relevant union official to have had sufficiently extensive experience so that they qualified to work as mechanics.
So they should have been, before this all started, they should have had that status. Is that the position of the union and the NLRB? If they were qualified, what, did they just fail to fill out the paperwork, Mr. Durian?
Well,
We only have seven people here, right?
Right, seven people.
So how many, everybody was qualified to be a mechanic?
That's correct, based on the experience that they had accrued at River City and at other jobs before River City, as evaluated by the union members, the union officials. And that is the same type of evaluation that would occur if any one of these individuals had gone down, they're not a member of the union, had gone down the day before, the day after, signed up on the union's out-of-work list, they would have been evaluated the same way. Tell me about your experience. How long have you been working there? Do you work without supervision? Do you supervise helpers, et cetera, et cetera? Okay, well, listening to your experience, you're going to go on the mechanics list. You're on the mechanics list.
So they were offering them nothing. They're just bringing them up to appropriate status.
Just a recognition of the status that they
should have had already, right?
But it should have had already is not quite right because.
What's the process to get this status?
Well, whenever a person joins the union, when someone moves from being a non-union member to a union member, mm-hmm. the evaluation is made in order to make the classification. Are you a mechanic? Are you a helper? And then that is done.
So this offer never would have been made if you had a category of people who didn't have that status? You have a unique situation. Everybody was available here for that status. So this, in effect, was offering nothing. Is that the position of the board?
It's offering nothing to which these employees were not entitled. If you take, if the situation had been different and, say, three out of these individuals had been working as in the elevator industry for, say, 2 to 3 years, obviously had not accrued the amount of experience to work independently, supervise, et cetera, and the union came in and said, guess what, you're all going to get mechanic status, that would have been providing those unqualified employees with something to which they were entitled. That did not happen here.
Mr. Turier, aren't there limits on the benefits that a union could provide in the context of an election, even if the benefits are provided equally to all, regardless of their support for the union?
Sure, sure. I mean, the there's
the question.
Of the question about if we'll give you $1,000 if we win the election,
right.
To everybody. Yes, there is both board and court case law supporting the reasonable position that a sort of gratuitous offer that's made across the board. Union comes in during the organizing campaign and says, everyone here gets $1,000, is something that is liable to interfere with an ability, the employee's ability to make a free choice as to their.
But how do we decide where that line is
right.
between appropriate incentives and inappropriate incentives?
I think that's a very good question, and how I would draw the line would be based on, it's a difference between describing benefits that are will be the result of joining the union, the benefits that union membership offers.
How does reduction in dues benefit? Assuming the dues are set at a reasonable and responsible rate and necessary for the maintenance of the welfare of the union, how is offering a reduction of dues an appropriate benefit as opposed to the $1,000 that Jeff Boser referenced?
Well, the
like a health club, that, you know, first 6 months free. Is that the way we should equate the offer of the?
No, I don't think so. I think that it has more to do with. Actual terms
it's
of
just
union
an offer
membership
cash. Let's cut to the chase. Isn't it just offering cash? It's the same as a check, right?
Well, that is not what the Supreme Court in say there in dicta said and dicta.
So then $1,000 is okay, right?
No, $1,000 is not okay because
you get 5 years of dues free or 2 years of dues free. We'll just add it up to the $1,000.
Well, sure, add it up to $1,000. The reduction, as the Supreme Court reasoned in say there, the reduction needs to be related to what it referred to as artificial obstacles to individuals making a choice to join a union.
Well, 5 years free membership seems to me to be a pretty strong inducement.
It would be.
And these wouldn't be 5 years here. What's the dues here, 400 something? What did you mention? You mentioned a figure.
I actually did not mention the figure.
So maybe
you mentioned the figure, yes.
So 2 years. We're getting pretty close.
The
you
membership.
The Supreme Court would say that's okay.
Yes, because of the unconditional across-the-board nature.
It's odd you describe this as an artificial obstacle. This is the union's own initiation fee.
Mm-hmm.
Artificial. But now you just said an answer to Chief Judge Flom that as long as it's across the board, it's okay. But that's true of $1,000. So
right. I'm trying to clarify the distinction between the $1,000 and the
dues. It's very difficult to do it. It's sort of as if one is a lot more subtle than the other, sort of more gentlemanly or ladylike
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
To say, we'll give you the membership.
How about a new set of tools, $1,000 worth of tools, which is today not necessarily a lot of money in picking up, in a particular trade. I'm not suggesting in the elevator trade that I have any insight.
Sure.
But let's say a toolkit. Everyone gets a $1,000 toolkit.
All right. Well, it's my understanding that would not be permissible under board law or under say there. And again, let me try to articulate what the distinction is between the $1,000 cash and the reduced dues and fees. As the reasoning went in say there, people who are not members of a union who are thinking about it may be reluctant to pony up money, cash, for a service that they haven't gotten anything from yet. So in order to do that, in order to make that, so it is within, it's within the union's permissible bounds of electioneering to reduce the fees and dues that they themselves have set to begin with for purposes of introducing new people into the organization who will then be elevated back to the fold.
So would you say a union could reduce fees until it violated its fiduciary responsibilities to the existing members? Is that the standard? In other words, if the board were looking at a given situation and dues are what maintains the board of the union
right.
in an appropriate fashion, would you, would your position be that if the offer was so generous, at least generous appearing, that it violated the financial viability of the union, that that's the kind of thing a court should look at to see whether it's beyond the pale? So
sure, sure. That would run afoul on that, and that sort of reasoning is encompassed in the conditions that the board has placed on a fair reduction in dues or a permissible reduction in dues that it can extend up until the point that an that a collective bargaining agreement is signed between the union, negotiated and signed between the union and the employer. I see that I've run out of time.
All right, thank you. Mr. Bullock?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Keith Bullock. I'm counsel for the union. I want to just address a couple points that have been raised up to this point in the oral argument. With respect to initiation fees and dues, there's substantial authority, both board and court, for which sort of follows the reasoning that the board counsel just said, that when you approach non-union members and you indicate to them that there's an initiation fee or a due, that can create an obstacle because you're asking them to pay that before the union has ever been certified or recognized to represent them. So the union makes an offer to reduce those dues, and it creates, and the courts have recognized that it creates.
I'm not tracking that. You don't pay the dues to join the member, the union, right? You have to pay it up front.
No, you don't pay dues up front. You would pay right. the initiation fee up front.
So if pre-election you don't have to write a check to the union. It's only after the election, right?
Yes. Well, it would be after you join. You would write
right.
that. You would write the check.
Right. Okay.
But what the courts have recognized, and including this court, that by lowering that on an equal basis to all people, regarding whether or not they support the union, the union is not creating a coercive effect.
Didn't the union go further here?
Are you referring to the mechanics card?
Yes.
I would argue no. There's no evidence to show that these employees were not qualified for those cards. The evidence shows...
Still, you're offering them, it's like the, you know, Judge Flom's toolkit. You're offering them reduced fees, and then you're giving them something else.
Well,
which the board lawyers seem to think was bad.
Well, I respectfully disagree. These employees were employed by River City as mechanics. The two employees who testified they did mechanics work, and they also testified it was similar to the work performed by union mechanics.
Isn't the only thing you cut out the middle man who writes the check for the $1,000?
I'm sorry, I don't think I understand.
Basically, these people aren't going to have to pay.
Well, they don't have to pay. They pay a reduced initiation fee, and they pay a reduced dues until such time that a collective bargaining agreement is executed on their behalf. They get the mechanic status as a reflection of their work experience, skills, and training. But they're not. I'm afraid I'm not seeing.
But why do they get the card then? I mean, that's the problem. The card is a benefit. They may be entirely, fully entitled to it, and so on. But the point is, you know, what if you had a politician standing outside a voting booth on election day, and the person comes in and he said, look, I learned that you were due a refund, and I went and got you this refund, and here it is. And that would be considered bribery, wouldn't it? even though you were giving a person something to which he was entitled, nevertheless, you're giving it to him in a context where it looks like an effort to curry favor for an election. How is the mechanics card different?
The mechanics card is different. I know it's about out of time, so I'll try to do this as shortly as possible. It's different because it does is it simply shows the union acknowledges the employer for what he or she already is, a mechanic. Unlike a refund where the employee...
It's like saying a driver's license just certifies that you know how to drive, but if you don't have the driver's license, you can't drive. So without the mechanics card, you don't get the benefit of being of the certification, do you?
Well, they could, as it was explained in the union's open membership policy, regardless of whether they were a union member or a non-union member, they could go down to the union
That's
hall.
That's right. They could get this. You could just, you know, someone who knows how to drive can go and get a driver's license. But until he gets the driver's license, he's not allowed to drive. So these people could get the card, but they hadn't gotten it. Now the union comes along and says, look, we have a goodie for you, a card, which will enable you to get employment. So that's like the toolkit. It's a benefit. It may be small because really it's just saving them some paperwork, but it's certainly offered to them as an inducement to support the union. And it doesn't have the rash. See, what you said about Sevier, you've explained, and you have a quote, and it's a quotation in the brief, it's reducing the dues for a very special reason. As you said, the special reason is that the person doesn't want to buy a pig in a poke. He doesn't want to vote for union representation if he knows that he's going to have to pay a huge fee to the union if the union wins. So, you know, the Supreme Court explains, okay, that's a reason to let the union waive the initiation fee. That's fine. But that rationale disappears when, having waived the initiation fee, they then pile on additional goodies like the mechanics card.
Well, I would respectfully submit that if the benefit that you're attributing to a mechanics card, being the job opportunities, isn't as what the employer has said. If you look at Article 22 of the standard agreement, what it says is that an employee goes down, any employee, union or non-union employee, can go down to the union hall. They can sign the open list for employment of workmen qualified to perform the duties required.
Do you have statistics on all of this? How many aren't?
They're not in the record, and I don't know them offhand. I don't have personal knowledge.
But, you know, to be realistic about it, an employee is not a member of a union. It's probably a little reluctant to go down to the union hall and ask for a benefit.
Well,
but in any event, whether it's a big benefit or a small benefit, what if they, is it clear that Sevier would permit them to forgive the initiation fees plus give the employee a fresh $20 bill?
Well, I think Sevier would entitle a union to provide.
Well, do you think the Sevier would permit that?
It would not permit reducing initiation fees and then giving an employee $20.
Okay, well, but surely this card is worth just $20 in saving the inconvenience of having to go down to the union hall and acknowledge you're not a union member and say you want the benefit anyway.
Well, I was trying to explain before, the benefit of the job access, once you sign that list, the union takes the list to other employers. Employers can ask for the list. The list of open workmen. Now, the way that the hiring hall is set up, there is no immediate access to jobs. An employer can ask for union to send 5 mechanics, 3 helpers.
I mean, that's ridiculous. That's like saying getting a law degree doesn't automatically give you a job. It's certainly a benefit.
Well, it doesn't automatically give you a job because you still have to be hired by the employer.
Well, of course, but if you have a law degree, you still have to be hired by someone. You're not going to go out and hang out your shingle.
Well, the union respectfully argues that it doesn't give them any significant benefit other than what they would normally be entitled to, and furthermore, it is just simply a recognition of who they are. Whether they got it beforehand or afterwards, there's no unlawful benefit that would coerce employees to support the union. It would just I know I'm really off, way over.
No, that's all right. I said you could respond. Is that your concluding remark then?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Schiff? Ms. Schiff?
I just have a couple quick comments. To address Judge Roger's comment, where are the statistics? Well, you'll note in our brief, the statistics aren't in the record because the hearing officer wouldn't allow us to get those statistics to challenge the union's argument. To address, Judge Flam, one of your questions to me, which the NLRB counsel came up and said, let me clarify the facts on this open membership thing. The open membership, the mechanics card gives these River City employees favorable treatment over both union and non-union members. Okay, so this open membership theory is doesn't dispute our argument. The facts about that the NLRB council mentioned about going down to the union hall, I sign up, I can be labeled a mechanic, that's not in the record. That's not in the standard agreement. If you look at Section 10, Paragraph 5 of the standard agreement, certainly union contractors can hire experienced workers under a mechanic's wage, but only for a probationary 6-month basis and until they take a mechanic's exam.
What about your situation, though, where this was offered in the context of everybody is eligible to be a mechanic? I assume it's in the record. I mean, in other words, this isn't as big a Benny as it might appear, because everyone here would have been eligible.
No way. That's not true.
It's not true.
They wouldn't have been eligible because the union controls, and this is in the record, it's not disputed, 80% of the jobs in this industry, all right, through the hiring hall. In order to get a mechanics card, when you're a union member, you've got to take the NEDA courses or the courses, and you've got to pass the exam. You can't get it any other way except what the union's saying in this organizing effort.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.